Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
The Premier League and the Champions League return this week, and it's back to club football for Manchester City, which means it's back to business for us on the Blue Moon Podcast too. It's bottom of the table Wolves at Molineux to come first, and nobody will be taking that for granted after last season's visit there. And then it's a first ever tie with Sparta Prague in midweek. On today's show, we'll be previewing both of those games with the help of Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves and Mike Samir from the Vladsi Prahi podcast. We'll look at how Pep Guardiola could manage the squad, given availability and the need to perhaps stop allowing games to become as transitional as they have been. Away from City, we've had the news that the FA were trying to tempt Guardiola into the England manager's position, but then earlier this week, Thomas Tuchel was confirmed as the new boss. Can we read anything into that decision for Pep's future at the Etihad, with the end of his current contract getting nearer and nearer? On top of that, we'll also be hearing from Gemma Jordan. She's the daughter of the former City defender Dave Watson. She's a filmmaker and is raising funds to tell her dad's story after he was diagnosed with dementia, thought to be linked with heading the ball. All of that to come, so let's get started. I'm David Mooney, and joining me this week, I've got City fan Richard Burns.
Hello there, David. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. And City fan and presenter with 442, Adam Monk.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are things, Adam? You well?
Yeah, very well, mate. Very, very well. All good.
Good. Burns, you doing well?
Yes, I am, thank you.
Good, good to hear. Well, we'll get to the England stuff a bit later on. But first, away from kind of the City side of things with this, with Guardiola, there's been plenty of fury that the coach of the England national team is a German. Since a lot of people have been up in arms that there's been no English manager worthy of the role or anything like that, I want to know who your favourite English City manager is. Someone suggested we should do favourite foreign City manager, but that's just going to be Guardiola. So I just want you to flip it on the head. Best English manager for City, Burns. So who are you going for?
Well, I will always have an affinity with Joe Royle, because he was the manager when I first got my season ticket, and my first two seasons were back-to-back promotions, and he did a lot of good at City. That said, it's got to be Keegan for me.
Yeah.
The football was absolutely outstanding. The points total, the goals total in that Division 1, now Championship year, was amazing. The 3-1 at Main Road, obviously the manager who sort of signed off for City at Main Road. It was just so much fun. And the end wasn't great, to say the least. I think everybody could see that the spark had gone somewhat. But it was magnificent. He was a great character. That was at that point, the best football that I'd ever seen City play. So a lot of love for Keegan.
Yeah, Adam, are you going to come on now and tell me that Stuart Pearce was your greatest?
Well, I think the choice between the ones who've managed in my lifetime are Pearce and Keegan. So I'd have to go with Keegan as well. Yeah. To be fair, I mean, my first ever City game was when Kevin Keegan was managing. So I guess that there's some level of like affinity there, and I think, like, even though I can't remember it because I was too young, like that era where like City sort of got promoted, I think like, yeah, that those like sort of early 2000 seasons where it was like Anelka was there, etc. I think, like, I saw the other day, actually, I think you tweeted about it, like when City beat Chelsea 1-0 at home. And they had Mourinho, that was under Kevin Keegan. So I think, yeah, in my lifetime, which is what I'll base it off, I'd have to go with Kevin Keegan.
Yeah, Richard, because you were slightly older than Adam. I want to just give Joe Royle a bit of love, because he would be my pick purely because of, he was the manager the first time in my lifetime where City didn't underachieve. Do you know what I mean? It was the first time where they had objectives going into the season. And that 99-2000 season, for instance, they exceeded them. And that's the first time I'd ever known that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And it's like, in truth, to be honest, like, Royal and Keegan are, they're like probably equal in my affections, but for the sake of giving an answer, and as the podcast resident's fence sitter, I wanted to give an actual answer. But, yeah, I was like, I loved Joe Royal for exactly the reasons that you've just said. Like, it was a great time to really start going to City. Like, I'd been to games before, but as a regular match goer and season ticket holder, like, it was somebody who, like, obviously he'd played for the club. He, I was wary of saying things like he gets it, but like he sort of did. Like he fully understood the whole City-itis and typical City and just the sort of ridiculousness of the club. And I think it felt like he really brought the fans back on side with the club. The second half of the 98-99 season was just fantastic. The run of form that City put together while still having, a whiff of ridiculousness about them, even the playoff final, which was insane. Like, and the players sort of bowing down to the fans at the end of the playoff final. Like, a lot of that came from the atmosphere that Royal fostered, I think. And yeah, to walk into an absolutely mad setup and make some success of it is a huge credit to him. And, you know, I don't think it's a stretch to say everything that has come since, this sliding doors moments, and you never know. But it's quite hard to imagine City being a viable club without those sort of stepping stones and foundations being built on the route back to the top that he sort of built. Granted, with a ending on a relegation, but we could only be relegated from the Premier League because he'd got us back to back promotions there. So it was a huge net positive.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to finish as well about best English managers of City by at least saying the name Joe Mercer, because I think if we got this far into the podcast and didn't do it, then there'd be quite a few people a little bit upset that we didn't mention the most successful City manager before Guardiola turned up. Let's start with a view from Molyneux. I've been speaking to Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves. I started by asking if he'd been hoping for a slightly better start to the season than Wolves have had so far.
Yeah, definitely. I think you look at the start and the run of fixtures that Wolves were given, and we know that it was going to be a really tough start. But ultimately, although, on paper, these are difficult games, you expect a team of Wolves quality and a team that has been in the Premier League for the last number of years to, be picking up more points. Yes, we played a lot of the current top six or top eight, but, we have also played the likes of Nottingham Forest, who have started off the season quite well, to be fair, and Brentford as well. But the quality performance is, it's not quite there, and it's been a frustrating and really difficult start for Wolves so far.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Gary O'Neill's comments after the Brentford game specifically about it just not looking like his team. Does that concern you at this stage?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I've said to many people, as in many fan bases, there's a lot of fans that are sort of a little bit too overexcited. I've got a lot of fans already saying, oh, preparing for the championship and whatever. But I think, if you're fairly level-headed like me, I hope anyway, I think, there's a long way to go, and I'm not even looking towards being relegated. I think we've got more than enough quality, and I think there's more than enough points still available. But it is a concern because Gary O'Neill did such a good job last year on such a little time. He came in very late. He got a real togetherness with the squad and got us playing some good football. But for whatever reason, it looks like a completely different manager at the moment. It looks like a completely different squad. I hope Gary's the man that can turn it around, but I don't think Wolves will wait around. I think in the next few weeks, if things don't improve, he'll probably be moved on come November if we're still in the same position.
Yeah, I mean, it's a far cry from when he did the tactical breakdown of how he beat City at Molyneux last season on Sky Sports, and it just kind of feels like it's about a year on, and it just kind of feels like it's got to this position, and I just kind of wonder why that is.
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, against City last year, that was almost the game that sort of kick-started our season. He had quite an underwhelming start, And then we just lost at Ipswich, who obviously were in the Championship at the time in the Cup. And a lot of Wolves fans were sort of questioning whether he was actually the man to move Wolves forward after just such a short period of time. And he switched tactics, which I might come to. I'm half expecting him to do that again this weekend. He switched tactics against City and ultimately we won that game. And that really, you know, gave us a kick up the backside to start, you know, getting some points on the board in the Premier League. But yeah, sir, I honestly don't know what's going on. I was hoping this year it would really kick on. He had a full pre-season, the first time in his career, really, as a manager. You know, he didn't have one at Bournemouth when he got thrown in the deep end. He didn't get one last year at Wolves. And this was his first year with a full pre-season. So I was hoping, you know, we can kick on. But he's changed systems. We've played with a five at the back, which I'm hoping and maybe expecting us to go to on Sunday against you guys. But he's switched to this back four and it's just not worked. And you look at our defensive record this season, it's utterly embarrassing. So something needs to be done on Sunday. Otherwise, City could have a really handsome scoreline.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to the back five in a minute because before we do, I just want to kind of look at the makeup of the squad because obviously in the transfer window, there were two fairly major departures in Max Kilman and Pedro Neto. Has that had a knock-on effect, do you think?
Potentially. This is a question that gets asked quite a lot whenever I'm sort of doing previews or little chats about Wolves at the moment. I think Neto was inevitable. I think we all knew that he was going to be probably moving on. I think we all know, and you guys would have seen it, you know, firsthand last year at Molineux, how good Pedro Neto can be on his day. Frustratingly for a team of Wolves' size, you know, you can't afford to have a player that good only available for sort of 40% of the season, really. So I think it was a good time for Wolves to maybe cash in. Have we replaced him properly? Maybe not just yet. You know, we signed Carlos Forbes, who obviously came from the City Academy, who, you know, I'd be quite interested to see if he plays a part on Sunday. Kilman was an interesting one. I think, you know, it was quite a surprise to see Kilman go. I think there are better defenders out there. I think Wolves probably got a good fee for Max, but ultimately he was the club captain and we've moved on our club captain now for the last three summers in Connor Cody, Ruben Neves and now Kilman. Although I don't think that's the whole reason why we're struggling. Ultimately, you know, you still want a bit of that consistency in the leadership. So that could be a reason, but defensively we've been poor. And although, you know, like I said just now, there are defenders out there better than Max Kilman. His availability, you know, it was 100%. He played pretty much every minute for us last year. And we've lost that a little bit with a couple of injuries, you know, to our centre-backs at the moment. So, although I think our squad is strong enough, certainly, you know, those two are, you know, I might look back in January and think, yeah, we could have really done with those two throughout this first half of the season.
Yeah, and you mentioned the defence. Gary O'Neill said it was too open against Brentford. And I think in the Sky Sports interview afterwards, he said he was asked about switching to a back five again. And he said something like that would mean every centre-back at the club playing at all times. And, you know, we don't have the personnel to do that. Do you think he'll do that this weekend? Because City, in this season especially, City have not liked playing against back fives.
I think he has to do something. If he plays a back four, I think it would almost be suicide for him because we've been that bad. He saw us against Brentford, and unless he's worked absolute miracles this international break, I'd be very shocked to see him stick with a back four. You know, he switched to the back five. He's quite right. You know, we don't have many senior centre backs at the moment. I think we've got three senior centre backs that are fit and available. Mosquera's got a long term injury. A young lad that we brought from France, Bastien Moypieu, has just come back from a long-term injury, so may be the backup there. But it's a risk because if we get one of those suspended or injured, you're almost back to the drawing board. But I've got an inkling that he will move to that. I think he has to. If he doesn't against City, like I said, unless we pull off the performance of the season, I wouldn't be surprised to be walking out of Molineux after conceding another three or four goals at least.
Yeah, it was pace on the break that was causing City problems last season. How have you looked like that this season?
Not so good, I don't think, because, you know, Pedro Neto was the whole reason for that. Cunha was full of, you know, momentum, and so was Hwang Ki-chan. Hwang's really, really struggling for form. Really, you know, his form's fell off a cliff since he left for the Asia Cup last January. Cunha still looks amazing in glimpses, but looks a frustrated character at the moment. You know, things aren't going his way. And really, that's why Forbes came in. You know, he got a little bit of time in the second half against Liverpool, looked really bright on the break. And then he got the start against Brentford as well, where no one really looked good enough. So I think I think Forbes may start on Sunday because, you know, I think Wolves need that injection of pace. But if we do go to a back five, it may limit his opportunity of playing because I think Gary would probably pick players over him. But certainly lost a lot of pace with Neto going, but also a lot of the momentum and confidence in the attacking lineup. You know, we're scoring goals. You know, we've only failed to score in only one game, the opening game against Arsenal. We scored in all our other games. But in terms of looking a real threat and ruthless in front of goal, we're really lacking that at the moment, to be completely honest.
Yeah, and I'm just, as you say, I'm just looking at your fixtures and, you know, you played Arsenal, played Chelsea, played Newcastle, Brighton, Villa, Liverpool. These are, they're not simple games to get through. And if you, if you're struggling for kind of momentum and form, they can really come, they can really start to be punishing. So yeah. I guess City on the horizon is the kind of last thing you want to see right now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't think Gary O'Neill would have liked that to see that fixture when the, you know, after this international break, he was under a hell of a lot of pressure after Brentford. There were a lot of fans actually calling for him to be moved on after that game. And the club sort of came out through the press and said, look, we're going to give him an opportunity to, you know, if we think he's deserved the opportunity to try and turn this around himself. But, we play you guys Brighton away after that. So they're not easy games. Ultimately, I think he's got back-to-back games at the start of November, both at Molineux, Southampton and Palace. He has to get wins from those games. If he doesn't, I think that's sort of when the next international break is, mid-November, I think he'll be gone. But like I said earlier, I really hope he can be the man that can turn it around because, you know, just 6 months ago, we were calling, and not just Wolves fans, but a lot of fans around the country calling him to potentially be the next England boss, which, you know, has changed very quickly. But, you know, he's a good young manager, and I hope he's the one that can turn things around for us and prove a lot of people wrong.
There is an inkling as well. There's a lot of City fans who will be listening to this going, well, you know, Wolves have lost, what, the last five? And, you know, City are unbeaten this season. We all know what's going to happen this weekend now, don't we? That's how football works.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think I saw another stat, but I'm going back slightly before my time, about 20, 21 years ago when we were in the Premier League. And I think a win against City was the team that broke our longest losing streak in the Premier League. I think it was a 1-0 win at Molineux or something like that. I think it was the 2003-04 season. So, you know, hopefully that's a good omen and we could do the same this weekend as well.
Yeah. Have performances been a bit better at home?
A little bit. I think the Newcastle game were okay. Liverpool were okay as well, I thought. You know, Liverpool we could have so easily got something out of and the Newcastle game as well. We were 1-0 up for such a long period of time and sort of, albeit, decent goals. I think, you know, two goals from range, which were probably stoppable, cost us the points there. So we've been okay. Even the Chelsea game, they smashed us at Molineux, but at half time, we were the better team and in the game at 2-2. So yeah, definitely a bit more promising at home. But my worry is that there's been so much negativity and we've had to sit on that for the last 2 weeks that if things start badly for Wolves, it could turn into quite a toxic place, Molineux, come sort of Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. Well, Dave, obviously the game last season turned out quite well for you. So can you see a repeat? What are you going to go for the charity bet this time?
I can't remember if I won one maybe last, did I? I can't remember if I predicted
it. I can't remember either, but if you did, then it was the right time to do it.
I can't see past City for this one, to be honest. I'll go 3-1 City on Sunday.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves. Adam, Wolves are bottom of the table, 5 defeats in a row. City unbeaten this season. We all know what's happening here, don't we?
Yeah, City win. Calm down, guys. I can't see any... Listen, like I said, I don't know what typical City are. All I see is us win. Yeah, I mean, this is one we lost last season, isn't it? It's a slightly precarious game. No away game is easy in the Premier League. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but it is true. And it does feel like with these kind of teams, when they lose their first 6 games, something has to give. And of course, there's a bit of a common denominator between this game and the one last season, in that there's no Rodri. So there's a few consistencies from last season to this one. But Wolves have lost a fair few players. Pep is currently trying to figure out the solution without Rodri, I feel. So it's not going to be a case of playing Kovacic lone 6 or maybe Calvin Phillips like he might have done last season. So I still, nonetheless, do expect City to get over the line in this one.
Mm. Richard, I assume Guardiola won't do the Matias Nunes experiment that he did last season at Molineux. It feels like City are better coped this year to deal without Rodri than they were when they had to do it last season.
I think so, yeah. And I think the evidence of that is in the
unbeaten win, run.
The win in, you know, starting the season with a whole host of wins when last season we had a whole host of defeats whenever Rodri wasn't there. Was it just Luton at home was the only game that that we won that Rodri didn't play?
Possibly, yeah.
And certainly, obviously, that the period that he was suspended for was an absolute disaster. So I think this season, clearly, the fact that his absence is more long-term forces City to have a more long-term plan for life without him. I suppose they always knew starting the season that they'd be without him for a period anyway, post-Euros. They just do... I think they look stronger. I think it's than they did last year. Clearly, and I'm sure we'll sort of say this all season, but it will always bear repeating, City are going to be worse without Rodri, or they're going to have to plan around for not having him because he's just an outstanding footballer. He's the best in his position in the world. He's arguably the best player in the world. Like that's it's not a crazy point to make. So you can't take one of your best players out and not be weakened. But I think there are players who, whether it has to be 2 players who fill his role, there are players who can step in and they might not be able to do exactly Rodri's job. But, you know, we won leagues without a striker. Like, it is possible, given the time to formulate a plan and deal without him. And the fact is that City will still be better than the vast, vast majority of teams that that they will play this season. They will have better players than most of them. And they've got the best manager. So... Mm. There is always, they should always be able to come up with a plan that gives them an advantage over most teams, and this game certainly falls into that category. And that's not to disrespect Wolves, because I'm worried about the banana skin element, but like Rodri missing shouldn't be the deciding factor when it's the champions against the bottom of the table team.
Yeah, if City lose this, it's not because they were missing a player, is it? It's because they didn't perform on the day. Adam, how would you like to see Guardiola approach this one then with that centre of midfield? I mentioned Matias Nunes to Richard. I would be mightily surprised if he did that this week. Is it simply a case Kovacic-Gundogan pair them up?
He has to play a 2, whatever he does. I think, right, personally, I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I don't know if I think this is my first podcast since Rodri's done his ACL. Now, I think we'll lose the league because of it. I don't think he'll be able to find a solution that is as good as what we had. I think he'll be able to find a solution that keeps us up there, but probably not that sort of 95 point threshold which we might need, because I think even though we've had an unbeaten run this season so far, whatever he's played throughout the middle, we've been so susceptible to the counter attack and just being bypassed through the middle by people who are powerful runners. You saw it in the Fulham game with Adama Traore. Mohamed Kudus did it at the London Stadium when we beat West Ham. So there's that element that really worries me. And Wolves have one of
it. You mean it could almost be a sense of 95 points to win you the league, but without Rodri, City might get 92. Like that close.
Yeah, or like 89 or something like that. Like, yeah. I do think that's the case, because I just think like Rodri screened City's back line so much better than anyone else could on his own. And he was always more positionally set for that transition that the other team would have. You'd never see Rodri doing a bleep test, legging it back to recover ground like you see Kovacic doing so many times. So I think, like, I don't know how he solves that. I think first thing, Kyle Walker's probably got to make way. And Rico Lewis has got to become that spare man in midfield just so we've got that extra outlet and we can keep most of the ball. But yeah, in the middle of the park for this one, I mean, Gundogan's retired from Germany now. He's had a proper rest. So logically, he'd come in now, I think. I would probably maybe try and do this one without Kovacic just to see if we strike a little bit of a different midfield balance. I think Gundogan as well, even though he's a lot older, he has played six in a title-winning run in 18-19. So that is something to look at. So I'd go with Gundogan and then Rico Lewis coming in from right back as that spare man in a double pivot.
Yeah, see if we can work it. Like a flashback to the old Guardiola days, I guess, in that sense. Richard, speaking to Dave there, he mentioned that he'd like to see Wolves go to a back five for this one. And Gary O'Neill's been playing a back four for most of the season and looking quite fragile with it. If Wolves do play a back five, that tends to be where City struggle. So can you see a situation where, like, Guardiola will pick the wide players that are the more explosive sort, the sort of Savinho and Doku sort, instead of the Grealish Bernardo sort?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pace of Savinho and Doku does give City a really, really handy option for getting at teams that are able to sit deep and, you know, like, stodge a game up. I think you used the word explosive, like that explosivity and unpredictability in, like, how they behave with the ball and the tricks that they're capable of doing. It definitely provides a different way to unlock a team. And then I suppose the consideration becomes, at least in my mind, becomes like, do you start with more control and introduce that explosivity if that isn't getting you through? Or do you start with the explosivity, do the damage, and then move to sort of the more controlling style of play that Grealish, for example, would bring? And like that, I suppose it's a delicate balance to strike. I'd be quite happy to see City go, and where are you saying on the front foot, given that City are a front foot team, but like I'd be very happy to see Savinho and Doku start and provide some real entertainment and you know, hopefully sort of blow the door down early and be able to sort of sit back on that with, as we move into this period of lots of games again, rather than be sort of moving towards the end of the game and
still trying to win it.
Yeah. But that's a very simplistic view, I guess. But yeah, I'd be very happy to see Savinho and Doku start.
Yeah, the issue here that I can't kind of wrap my head around, Adam, is that if you were to talk about Savinho and Doku as the players that can expose a little bit of space, there probably isn't going to be that space if Wolves play a back five. So I'm wondering how crucial the wings will actually be in this game.
Yeah, very. I think Pep trusts the ones who've been here longest, which is Grealish and Bernardo. Therefore, I think they start. Is De Bruyne a fit? Have I been out of the loop?
I don't know. We'll find out more on Friday, which is annoying that we record the podcast on a Thursday. Yeah. I accept that, yeah.
Because I think, like, that's quite important with this. Because, yeah, I think they will play a back five. And how I think they'll beat us is they have got one of the best left-backs in the league in Aitnori. He's very, very good at carrying the ball down that left channel. And then they've got Mateus Cunha, who's also very, very good at carrying the ball over 40 yards. He plays, like, left centre mid, kind of. So it'll be that left flank where you'd think we might have Rico Lewis inverting, where they're going to try and get us, quite similar to how Fulham did. I think with that in mind, and that there'll be little space, it'd probably go for Bernardo and Grealish, who can also defensively contribute on that counter-attack out wide. But yeah, that playing them also depends on whether we've got the creative king in the middle of the park with De Bruyne, I think. So it's a bit of a balancing act, like Richard said. playing Doku and Savinho, I think, makes more sense in the Champions League midweek, because that's maybe you'd think is going to be a lot more of an expansive game with like a load of space against, let's admit, worse opposition as well. So, yeah.
Well, let's move to that game. We'll find out a bit more about Sparta Prague. Now, I've been speaking to Mike Samir from the Vladci Prahy podcast. He told me, this isn't in the interview, but he told me what Vladci Prahy means. This is why the podcast is called that.
That means the Kings of Prague, which is like a nickname for Sparta Prague for ages. It's been owned by us for decades. I mean, Slavia Prague, the biggest rival, is trying to claim it, but no way, this is Sparta name.
Yeah, it's Sparta's name, so that's the name of the podcast. I've been speaking to Mike to find out more about how things are going at the moment for them.
Yeah, second in the table is sort of okay, but not great, because we always strive to be the first. However, us being in the Champions League for the first time in 20 years has brought a lot of strain on the team. You know, it's we've been trying for so long to be in the Champions League, and now we are. And suddenly the league is not as easy as it used to be. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're suddenly playing the likes of Man City. And obviously when you play someone like that and the week after you go some, you know, little town in the south of Bohemia, you're like, suddenly, what am I supposed to play like properly now? Or, you know, it's a little hard to find the motivation for the guys at the moment. And subsequently, we also lost the derby with Slavia, which is again down to us being in the Champions League. So it's a period of celebration and also a period of a little concern.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the Champions League then, because obviously you came through qualification to get there. What's the Champions League campaign been like for you so far? Because you look at the results in the group, 1-1, drawn 1, it's going all right so far.
Yeah, we've overdone ourselves. Look, when we got in after three rounds of qualifications, all the journalists here in the Czech Republic was like, Sparta Prague is going to get 4 points in total max. That was the sort of like, you know, expectation. We've done 4 points in two games, in the first two games, because we've started by beating Salzburg, the Red Bull Salzburg, 3-0 at home, which was a big one for us. That was like probably the best game I've seen from us for a long time. And then we went to, where did we go? We went to Stuttgart, and obviously them being, you know, one of the best teams in the Bundesliga, you know, sort of almost German champions, we were like, yeah, this is where the thrashing is going to begin. But we went 1-1 with them after a brilliant first half and sort of defensive second. So everyone's like, what was going on? How come Sparta's got 4 points already after two games? But at the same time, next game, Man City. So you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is like you're going to play probably the best team in the world at the moment, and you're going away. Because them being in Prague, I don't think we would expect to win, but at least we would maybe expect to, you know, give them a hard game. But us playing at Etihad, mate, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but what are your hopes and expectations for the group overall? What would you like to see for Sparta in the Champions League group this season?
Look, after two games with 4 points, we want to progress. You know, now we want to progress. Of course, the game at Etihad is not the one where we, you know, expect any points. If we can give you guys a good game, then we're happy. But we have a game at home against Brest, you know, the French team. So that's where we hope to get another 3 points. And with 7 points, you're sort of on the borderline. And then we're playing Inter at home, where I feel Sparta is doing really well against Italian teams. Inter's good at the moment, but we think we can draw them. And then we have Atletico Madrid at home, which is also obviously a difficult game. But we also have Feyenoord away. And the funny thing is, Feyenoord Rotterdam, the Dutch team, they have the coach we've left last season. You know, he's been with us for the last two seasons. He's been the guy that turned things around. And then on the back of the success, he went to Feyenoord. And we're playing them now in the Champions League. So we're sort of hoping to, you know, get something from that as well. So if we can progress to the second stage with, you know, 8-9 points, that would be massive for Sparta, like massive.
Yeah, what do you think the approach will be at the Etihad in terms of playing style? Because we've seen City struggle a little bit this season with teams that like to get the ball on the counter attack and play in transition. I'm guessing that will be a big tactic for you, will it?
That's exactly what we're going to do, of course. I mean, everyone still remembers us playing in the Europa League last year against Liverpool. And Liverpool scored 6-1 away in Prague. And I think it was 6-1 in Liverpool at Anfield. And it was, I think, 6-0. But it was a thrashing. It was complete disaster. It was with the previous coach. And I think everyone learned to play an open game with a Premier League team is not where we are at the moment, obviously. So I think we're going to be defensive. Of course, we're going to be defensive. But we are very good with counter-attacks. We have international players on the sides, on the wings. We have Haraslin from the Slovakia, and we have Preciado, who is an Ecuadorian international. So, you know, there is some serious strength on the, and we've got Rahmani now, who is a Kosovan international, scoring left, right and center. So with these three guys up front, we can score, I think. I think it's possible, all right? So look, in all honesty, if with our tactics we come, you know, like 2-1, 3-1 down, this is going to be like progress for Sparta. In my wet dreams, I see a draw, but I don't think that's very possible.
Yeah, in terms of the players, you mentioned a couple of players there. Who are the dangerous players for Sparta? Who should City be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, the up front. You're looking at left-hand side for left wing. You've got Lukasz Haraslin, who is known because he's been away in Italy. He's done really well in the last Euros. I think he's going to be sold very, very soon. On the right, you have Veljko Birmančević, who is from Serbia. Again, they're all international players, you know, playing the Euros and sort of, you know, they are the guys who you expect to go to Bundesliga and French League and so on. And up front, we newly have the biggest appointment we've ever made from Romania. He's not Romanian, he's Kosovan. His name is Rahmani. And this guy, you know, he scored like a couple of goals for Sparta. And the quality of the goals, the quality of the finishing, we haven't seen anything like it for decades in the Czech League. So he's way above, you know, the Czech League at the moment. So we were very lucky to get him, because I know the top Italian teams were after him, and he was clever enough to say, look, I think I still need to make, you know, a step between, you know, where I come from and between the top level. So he went to Sparta. So these three guys up front, yes, they can damage anyone really on the counter attack, because they are skilled enough and they're fast enough. And as you said, we see the holes in the Man City defense when it comes to counter attacks. Yes.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, there's also an element here. I don't know. Are Sparta going to have to change the way they would usually play? Because you look at how you are a dominant side in the Czech League. If you suddenly come up against a team that you can't be as dominant against, does that make it difficult to adapt in many ways?
Not anymore. We used to find it hard, but look at us at Stuttgart. This, especially in the second half, we were all defense, okay? And Stuttgart is a high-scoring team. In Bundesliga, they give 3, 4, 5 goals to any team that comes them. And we managed to hold them. You know, they did nothing in the second half. So it was a 1-1 draw. In the first half, we surprised them by being, you know, full-on attacking team, which they didn't expect. It was a brilliant coaching from our coach, because he went the other way around. They expected us to start from the back, but we went up front at the beginning. And in the second half, when they expected us to, you know, try to continue, we did the very opposite. So I think it was a masterclass tactically. I don't think we're going to go up front with Man City. That's that's a whole different level. So we are used to play like this in Europe now, this year, definitely. Last year, you know, look what happened to us with Liverpool.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to it? Because, like you say, you've waited for a while to be in the Champions League. These are the games they want, aren't they?
Absolutely, it is. The only thing is, I would appreciate if Man City came to Prague. You know, I used to live in the UK for like 15 years. I'm a UK national as well, actually. I've got a passport. So I'm half Czech, half British. To be honest, I've thought a lot about traveling to Manchester for the game. But, you know this better than anyone. We have to record the podcast the next day. and I wouldn't make it back on time. So I decided not to fly at the end. But teams like that you want to see at home. You want to see Erling Haaland at Sparta. Do you know what I mean? Like, we get Inter and we get Atletico Madrid, and it's like, yeah, great, but we wanted Manchester City. We wanted someone like Real Madrid, Barcelona, you know, one of these massive top teams at the moment to come to Prague, and we didn't get that. So we were a little disappointed with the draw, but of course, we are excited, but for us, we're trying to see whether a progress has been made. 6-0 against Liverpool last year. Did we get better since then? Is it going to be another 6-0? Because if so, then we're going to be like, okay, so what are we doing? Are we learning anything? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have a charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show, and I like to hand my prediction over to the guests. So, over to you. What's your score prediction for this game? What do you think will happen?
Oh, am I putting this on a ticket, or am I trying to tell my wish?
Well, it's entirely up to you. Yeah, we're raising money for charity, so if you want to go with your head or your heart, it's up to you.
I'm gonna go with my head for once in my life, and I'm gonna go 3-1 City, Erling Haaland scoring 2 goals.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Mike Samir from the Vladci Prahi podcast. Richard Adam mentioned it before. There might be the opportunity to do a little bit more damage in this game. Does City need a big performance like this? Because you think back to the Bratislava game, and sure, that City absolutely battered them, but the scoreline doesn't necessarily say that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that game, like, to come away from a 4-0 win and feel like it didn't reflect the dominance was quite a strange feeling. I mean, I'll be honest, I almost found that game... I must be very careful how I say this because it's going to sound incredibly miserable. That game was so easy from Bratislava missing the chance that they had early on. It was such a mismatch from the start that, like, I almost didn't find it enjoyable. Like, it was the goals went in. It was like, yeah, that's about right. And so I think, like, it's hard for games at this stage against teams that are clearly inferior to City. I think it's hard for them to ever be sort of statement wins. And I think there's it's more an element of if you can rack up a decent scoreline, and obviously getting the 3 points is first and foremost, if you can then rack up a decent scoreline, then like the elements of almost rotating the goals a bit, you know, Haaland was, and I guess will remain, but Haaland was so responsible for our goals at the start of the season that, you know, there wasn't a lot of variety in there at all. The Bratislava game did address that a bit. We had 2 goals for Gundogan. 1 goal for Gundogan, 1 for Foden, 1 for McAtee, spreading that around a little bit. It would be good if we could start to do that a bit more in a Champions League game against another team that City should be vastly better than, might present another opportunity to do that and get a bit more. I'm really trying to avoid like going into training game territory or you know, getting, I was going to say like a bit more practice for everybody, and that's a one a really terrible sentence and 2 really disrespectful.
It's that Mike Lowen thing, isn't it? Well done, he's 16.
Yeah. I'm sort of like leaning towards more than it being a statement, because I just don't think you can make a statement when you're arguably the best team in Europe still and you're playing this kind of game. But a chance to rotate the goals, hopefully, and put on a bit of a show would definitely be welcome.
Yeah, rotating the goals might make scoring difficult, though, won't it?
Very good.
Sorry. I just, in my head, all I could imagine was just like half time comes and they go, right, you've scored enough, and just turning them round at the end of the year.
What's really annoying about that, as you all know, David, is that is exactly my kind of joke. And because it's my kind of joke, I spend my whole time trying to guard against somebody trying to make that kind of joke when I speak.
Excellent. Adam, just listening to Mike there, they're 2 places below City in the Champions League table, but they have only played a pot 3 and a pot 4 team. They were pot 4 themselves. Is there any reason why this shouldn't be another game like the Bratislava one for City?
I don't think so. I think this new format is horrifically boring. And I was like, I watched that. Sorry, that was a bit over the top. But like that Bratislava game, I completely agree with Richard. I was sat in a pub with my mate watching it in London. And after about 20 minutes, I just found myself, my head turned 45 degrees to the right, just towards my mate. And I don't think I looked up again until Haaland scored, because you could just tell that City were in 10th gear. Like, they really were. The disparity was way, way too big for the most, you know, supposedly the most elite level of club football. Like, it's just, it's a money-making scheme to make sure that on television they've got a blockbuster game on every night. That's all it is. Mm. And the more teams you've got, the more disparity there is between opposition, especially when this team's as good as City in there. And then, yeah, like, listen, Stade Brest, I think, are like up there in the top four or something at the moment, because they've played like weaker opposition. So it's not really found its level out the league table yet. But I just think, like, I fully, fully expect another formality with this. There's like, and it'll be one of them. Like, you remember last season, was it Red Star Belgrade we played, where we played them at home? And in the first half, it looked like half the team couldn't be arsed. And then at the end of the first half, Red Star Belgrade just scored out of nowhere. And then the second half, they just kind of pulled the socks up. City went out and won 3-1.
Yeah.
And it could just be something like that. Like, I just don't see any way in where they realistically lay a glove on us.
Yeah, Adam, I know I've given you a lift to a few places, yeah, you know, down the years, like home from work, you know, over to football, that sort of thing. Are you a driver yourself?
I can drive, but I quickly got rid of my car after I hit a cyclist the day I passed my test.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that story. We might get into that a bit later on. But no, I just like you said, that City were in 10th gear. That would mean that they were working really, really hard, wouldn't it? Like, they didn't get out of first gear
I think I was in 10th gear when I turned that left corner when the cyclist went as well.
Yeah,
that was just an
exaggeration. The cyclist okay?
Yeah, he was absolutely fine. I was only doing like five. And to be fair, in hindsight, I was 19. It was kind of his fault a bit as well. But if you want me to pick the bones out of it later, I can do. It was all good though. You could just tell. What I mean by that is, I feel like half the chances in that Bratislava game, they weren't really hit with any real conviction or like, oh, I must score this. It was just like, yeah, I've had a pop. Oh, it didn't go in. Like, it was just, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's funny here, Richard, as well, that you're the person I've been in the car with when they've crashed.
No, you've not. Never happened. Wasn't my fault. Wasn't a McDonald's drive-thru. And friend Rob Pollard, formerly of this parish, wasn't in the car park shouting, "You stupid twat," at me. None of that happened. And we don't need to talk about it.
Excellent. Okay, we won't talk about it.
I can imagine that in Rob's voice now.
Yeah, we won't talk about it then. But it was definitely not when we were recording a podcast as well. Adam talked about the format of the Champions League. I think it's interesting that Guardiola, I don't know if you saw, Guardiola did an interview on Italian TV this week where he basically said, "I've got no idea what we need to do in this format. Well, I'll learn it as the season goes on, but I don't know what's going on." Do you find it comforting to hear it, like somebody with his experience just go, "Yeah, all right, we'll roll with the punches, see what happens"?
I think that's Pep's way of saying this is crap. I think that's his respectful way of saying, yeah, I don't really know. Like, him saying he does know what he needs to do, he just needs to navigate it. But I think what he means is he doesn't know, like, it changes up, like, maybe in a way you could look at it, because of the quality of opposition, it makes rotation a little bit more easy in this earlier part of the season. That is one bonus I could think of. Mm. But, like, my overarching point, and I came to this conclusion after the Inter Milan game, right? If that was a six-game group and we had Inter Milan, top-quality team, and we drew at home in the first game of the group, that would then definitely put some onus on City to go and win at the San Siro to make sure that they top the group. And there is none of that with this. Like, we drew 0-0 with Inter Milan. Both teams shrugged because they know they're going to finish in the top eight anyway. And it's that for me. I think it's just removed that, like, it's removed the jeopardy, I think. I think Pep maybe feels that too. And he's kind of just going, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Let's just keep rocking up and stroll into wins. So, yeah.
I think the jeopardy point is an interesting one, because I mean, this isn't an insightful point, but my view of the Champions League is that in the previous format, It's always weighted towards the big teams. It's like the you would get the occasional group of death, granted, but the format really came alive in the last 16 to and then particularly the quarterfinal. And from the quarterfinal onwards, it's I mean it might be the best competition in the world, but it's always the it's mostly the same teams that make it, and then certainly the same in for the semi-finals. So I always felt that the level of jeopardy for the elite teams wasn't really there anyway in the previous format. This does seem like a way of removing it further. I think, Adam, you might have said this on a previous podcast already this season, so apologies if I'm just stealing your words, but I think you can always sort of assume that the decisions that UEFA and FIFA make are rarely actually for the good of the game. So, you do just start with that default position of thinking this is probably not going to be good, but okay, let's give it a chance. It's not good to be playing a number of games against teams so vastly inferior. And I know, like Mooney, you've made the point previously in response to that of course there's an incentive to finish top because you can't then play the team that in second until the final. But then there used to be, I think, a genuine incentive between finishing first or second in the group. And it was the counterpoint to, if you finish first, you can't play the team that finished second. And if you finish second, you can't play the team that finished first. So there's no actual incentive to try and top the group if you manage to get yourself to a cushy top two position, because is that not the same difference? So yeah, I think it's an odd format, and I'm wary of just sort of poo-pooing it like two games in. But I've not yet seen anything that makes me think it's an improvement on what came before, other than it is quite fun to like look at the league table changing as goals go in, because it just looks absolutely crackers.
Yeah. What is absolutely crackers is the amount that we've won on the charity bet so far this season. We've had a couple of weeks now where we haven't managed to add to the total, but we're still on 525 for the season so far, which is quite a way ahead of what we've ever been at this stage before. Let's see if we can't add to it now. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and we got two chances to add to the pot this time. We've already heard from Dave on the Wolves game. He thinks a 3-1 City win. That is 10-1 and £100 if he's right. Richard, what are you having for this one?
Well, obviously City aren't winning because of the banana skin element, which is why I'm going for Wolves 0, City 2.
Because... Excellent, because that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Because I can never predict against them.
Excellent. Right, well, that's 15-2, £75 if you are right. Adam, what are you having?
I'll go with Wolves 0, City 3, and I think we'll win this one in seventh gear.
Excellent. That's 9-1 and £90 if you are right. And then that takes us to the Champions League game in the midweek. Mike's gone for a 3-1 City win. That is 14-1 and £140 if he's right. Richard?
I'd love to be massively undercooking this based on everything that we've already said. I'm going City 3, Sparta 0.
That's 5-1 and £50. Adam, over to you.
6-0. Yeah, I think if Haaland decides he wants a hat trick, that might happen, and I think he will.
Excellent. I would like Haaland to get all six, please. That is 18-1 and £180 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now then, ask a fan of a certain vintage for their best ever City 11, and there's one defender who is often in that team. Dave Watson might have only played four seasons at Main Road in the 1970s, but he left a legacy that still stands firm to this day. In 2014, Dave was diagnosed with dementia, and in 2020, he and his family went public with the news. Last year, we asked if Dave would be well enough to speak to the podcast, but sadly, he isn't. He's often at the Etihad watching City, and his family say that his football memories are his strongest. His daughter Gemma Jordan is a filmmaker and is now fundraising to be able to finish a documentary about her dad's life, his career and his battle with dementia. I've been speaking to her about it, starting with why she wanted to do it.
My dad is my hero, and I know that sounds like a cliche, but you know, he was an amazing dad. He is an amazing dad, even though he's not very well now. But growing up, he was the type of father who, you know, would get on the floor with you, roll around on the floor, always messing about, almost like a kid himself, really. Great sense of humor, very patient, very, very encouraging. Just really instilled a lot of self-belief in us as kids. He's the kind of person who would do anything for us, but also for other people. You know, the kind of person who would give you the shirt off their back. And obviously he was this big, strong dad too, right? So he wasn't afraid of anything. So, you know, felt very safe, always felt like he would protect you. And then as I grew up, you know, my dad retired from football when I was about seven. So I actually ended up spending quite a lot of time with him when I was growing up because he was working from home on his business, his sports marketing agency. So we spent a hell of a lot of time together. You know, he was the one who picked me up from school, and he, school holidays, I would tag along with him. So yeah, I mean, he's so much more than a footballer, you know, he loved animals, he loved music, and he kind of instilled all of that in us. And I think, you know, as I got older, because I was so young when he was playing, it was just my dad's job and I didn't really understand, right? But then as I got older, people would tell me things about him. Oh, your dad, he was, you know, so brave, he's a rock, he's courageous, he's almost kind of created this feeling that he was like some sort of warrior, you know, or completely invincible. And so that's kind of how I always felt about him. And then obviously when he was diagnosed with a neurodegenerative disease, then you kind of realize, oh, he's not invincible, he's not unbreakable. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of us can relate to, right, is that kind of realization that certain people in our life, whether it's our parents, whoever, someone we look up to, that they're not invincible and we're all mortal, I guess. So I think that's part of this process for me, actually, is sort of coming to terms with that, and also trying to figure out like who he really was, because my perception of him is of a father. That's my connection, but he obviously had this glorious career in football. So I've been kind of diving into that. And it's really interesting actually talking to, you know, his former teammates and even his mates when he was growing up, you know, about how he was back then. It's a fascinating journey.
Yeah. How is he and your mum doing at the moment?
They're doing all right. I mean, you know, it's a hard question to answer. It's, any kind of dementia-related illness is really difficult, and obviously it's degenerative, so it's just gets worse. But there's good days and there's bad days, and you know, I feel like he's doing remarkably well considering how long he's had this diagnosis. It's been over 10 years, so you know, he's still gets out and about. You know, he'll go to football matches, he'll go to these memory clubs at some of the clubs that he used to play for, and other clubs that he didn't play for, but he knows people that did. It's a kind of a new thing that started in the last couple of years. I think it started at Rotherham, and now it's growing. So it's like a social gathering for former players, some of whom have dementia, some who don't. But it's a way for them to connect, get out there, be around their peers, reminisce, have a laugh. With, you know, no judgment, no pressure, but that's the environment that these guys, former footballers who have dementia, that's the environment that they feel comfortable in. So I think that's really helped my dad a lot. But yeah, he's doing all right.
Yeah, that's good to hear. When it comes to the documentary that you're making, you have actually started the documentary. So you've spoken to a few of his ex-teammates, as you say, and people that knew him. How do they describe him?
Uncompromising, you know, very professional, like a solid professional footballer, if you get what I'm saying. Like, he took care of himself, he trained hard. He trained as hard as he played. Very reliable on the pitch. That's a word I hear a lot. Like, they knew they could count on him. They felt comfortable when he was in the squad. And a leader as well. Definitely, you know, it's time at City. Can't remember exactly when it was, but at some point he was the captain for a while. And I've spoken to some of his teammates at City, and they felt like he was a good, strong captain. But yeah, just the kind of player who would just go in for every tackle, go in for every header, would run through a brick wall type scenario. I was talking to Steve Coppell because I haven't interviewed him for the documentary yet, but just a pre-interview, and he was telling me all sorts of things I didn't know about the stuff that he and my dad would get up to when, because they were roommates for England. And, they roomed together for England, I should say. He's told me some just funny stories about the kinds of things they got up to when, you know, there's a lot of free time when you're on international duty. So there's all sorts of stories, like they went on the set of The Shining when that was being filmed and saw a scene being shot over and over and over, and met Jack Nicholson. And there was a group of them that went, I think Tony Curry was one of them as well. And my dad had talked about that, but it's just hearing these stories from his friends, realizing that my dad was kind of very always sort of up for experiencing different things. And he would go to a lot of concerts as well because he was really into music, and he kind of got Steve Coppell into that type of music as well, kind of rock music and different kind of sides to my dad, I guess, that I hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah. What would it mean to you to get it finished for him?
Oh, it would mean the world to me. I mean, it's more about, you know, we kind of made a decision as a family that I was going to make the documentary right after he bravely decided to go public with his diagnosis. So we're kind of like, okay, this is not a great situation, you know, that we're in, that you're in, and it's not going to be an easy road, but it's something that's affecting a lot of people. You know, can we make it better for someone out there by sharing your story? And so he was committed to doing that. So I want to follow through on that, you know, for him. But also, I just think that he's the type of player that, because he didn't have a huge ego and wasn't, you know, a headline grabber, I guess, you know, I fear that kind of generation, their stories get forgotten in the legacy of football. And I know that sounds crazy to a lot of the hardcore fans, but you know what people say about Manchester City not having a history. So it's like people kind of like to forget that period. And when he was playing for City, they were really good and they were winning trophies and, you know, almost won the league, you know, 1 point behind Liverpool, I think they were. I also want to capture that, document his legacy as well.
And in terms of kind of the fundraiser and kind of where you're at with that, how's that going at the moment?
So basically, I decided to... So I've been filming since 2021, on and off. But I live in the States, obviously there in the UK. So I've been kind of doing it piecemeal and was funding it myself really for a while. And I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to open this up to the public and see if people want to contribute to help me finish filming. So I'm trying to raise money right now for a 2-week shoot in the UK at the beginning of next year so I can finish the interviews that I want to get. It's going well. It's going well. Like, in the first week, we already raised 30% of our goal. So the goal is it's $35,000. I'm doing it all in dollars because I'm here in the States. So hopefully that's not confusing to people, but it's been on Indiegogo for 3 or 4 weeks now. We're almost to halfway to our goal, but obviously it'd be great to reach the goal. We've got another month of fundraising, and then, you know, whatever happens, whatever, however much I raise, I will still obviously complete the shoot and get it done. If there's one thing my dad taught me, it's persistence pays off. So we'll keep going with it. But yeah, it's on Indiegogo. You know, we've created these different kinds of rewards for people that donate. So we've got a really cool t-shirt and poster of my dad. We've got a mug that we've made with my dad's face on it and this caption, "What a difference a Dave makes." So we're trying to kind of have fun with it as well. But yeah, the support and the reaction has been tremendous. We just need, you know, more people to just donate just small amounts of money, really, so we can reach the goal.
And just finally on your dad as well, we still see him and your mum at City games. I imagine is that a way for him to kind of connect with his past and kind of help his memories? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, he remembers football better than he remembers anything else, I'd say, because it was obviously so much part of his identity and his life. So I think he really enjoys going to watch City play. He goes and watches games in Nottingham as well. And it's just good to be still connected with football and still feel that love. You know, I know it sounds cheesy, but I do feel like football is like one big family. And that's why, you know, part of the reason we want to raise awareness about this issue is because it is, you know, the statistics don't lie. They are 3.5 times more likely to die from a neurodegenerative disease. So, you know, I'm not trying to make a hit piece on football or on heading. That's not what this is, but these are conversations that, you know, we need to be having, and they're uncomfortable conversations, right? But we do need to confront the fact that you have an increased risk of developing a degenerative brain disease if you play professional football. And, you know, why is that and what can we do? And I think for my dad, it was an incredible amount of heading and training all the way through his career. My dad, right from the get-go, he would do extra practice, extra heading practice. And then that carried on throughout his career. And one of the things that he was celebrated for was his heading ability. And he loved to jump and get up there and in both ends of the pitch. But, you know, we do think that's part of the reason why he's, you know, suffering now. And the other side of it is trying to make sure that families are supported appropriately. So there is a fund now that the Premier League is funding with the PFA for families that are affected by neurodegenerative diseases. And that's brilliant. But it's new and it's like, we just got to keep the pressure on, I think, so that people don't stop talking about this, because it's not going to go away. My dad's story really is a story of resilience and determination, and that carries through from the beginning of his, you know, life, trying to make it to as a professional and then trying to make it into the top flight. I mean, he didn't play first division football until he was just shy of his 29th birthday, you know. So he has an interesting story, but the key theme, even now, with the dementia and with the disease that he's struggling with, is that determination and resilience. So I just really want that to come across.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Gemma Jordan, Dave Watson's daughter, speaking to me about the documentary film about her dad that she's fundraising for. If you'd like to contribute, you can find it on davewatsonfilm.com, or you can search Dave Watson documentary and find the Indiegogo page there. We'll also put the links to the fundraiser in the podcast's episode description as well. We are going to finish with a listener question. Before we do, Richard, we've got two jingles from Higgy now. So I need to know which one to play. Would you like the first or the second one?
The second one, please.
The second one. Okay, here we go.
The listener's questions, the listener's questions, the listener's questions, the listener's questions. So it's the listener's questions bit. Please make sure that yours ain't shit, because Mooney won't put up with it. Yes, it's the listener's questions. The listener's questions, the listener's questions. Thank you.
There we go. I hope people are not getting tired of these, because I fear he's going to keep making them.
What I love about that is, aside from the obvious, and I hope I'm not denigrating Chris's singing style. I think that was probably recorded late at night when the rest of the family were in bed and he was trying not to wake them up.
It sounded like you got possessed at the end of that listener's questions. The listener's questions.
I need to check what time I received in that voice note, but there's a very I can't remember if I was asleep or not when it arrived, so it would be interesting to know. I'll confirm that for you a bit later on. Get in touch with future questions for future shows at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter. You can email through the website bluemoonpodcast.com. Just head over there, fill in the form, and send us a question. David on Twitter says, do you take comfort in the stories that England were going after Guardiola so strongly, but they didn't make it happen? Do you think this makes him more likely to sign an extension, or is that wishful thinking? Adam, are you wishing for an extension with Guardiola? Can you read anything into this week's news?
I am wishing for an extension, absolutely. I think that it's a little boost, but I feel like Pep, similar to maybe Klopp, although having said that, Klopp's now already took a job, will be one of them that when he leaves, it'll be, seriously, lads, give me a break. I need to go on a beach somewhere. Like, I think that'll be Pep when he does decide to go. But the murmurings are at the moment that he's going to stay. He likes the idea of doing a decade. I've always thought that. I think it seems like a nice round number, gives him a couple more seasons.
20's a nice round number, though.
20's a nice round number. And, well, I also think, like, this is my logic. I think if he goes to 10 years, wins a couple more leagues, then he's creeping up to Ferguson's Premier League tally. And he's thinking, go on then, I'll just topple him on the way out as well. So then he'll stay a couple more years. And then it'll just become like Stockholm syndrome. Hopefully he just never leaves and he's just there for 20 years. But in terms of, yeah, like, I thought that maybe, I thought there was maybe like 20% chance he'd take the England job. I think it's quite a romantic job to take. Very different to what Pep's done previously. And I won't rule him out from taking it in the future, perhaps. I still think he's quite a young manager, relatively speaking. But yeah, it's a nice little boost. But I'd say at the moment, regardless of the England decision, I'm more leaning towards him extending. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah, Richard, I really thought he was going to take the England job. It seemed like everything was aligning to make sense for him to take that move at the end of this season. That doesn't necessarily mean he will extend at City, but I just wonder if it was if we can read anything into the fact that England was so strongly going after him and haven't got him.
Yeah, I think England have done a very good job of remaining very confidential about all of this. I have to say, I mean, I think it transpires that Tuchel signed his contract a little while ago, didn't he, without the news really getting out. So I think in that sort of vacuum of actual news, it's easy to sort of start putting some assumptions on things. I think it could indicate loads of things. It could indicate that Pep just doesn't fancy international management at this stage. It could indicate that he's knackered and, as Adam said, like when he's finished with City, that he'll just want a break and maybe doesn't want to go straight into the intensity of, although it's less intense in terms of day-to-day management, like the level of scrutiny that comes with the England job.
Do you see him ever doing another club?
Well, this is what I was going to come to. So I think in terms of like where it leaves me thinking, like with his future with City, I don't see a club being able to tempt him away. Like he's clearly very, very happy in Manchester. He's clearly happy with the City setup. He clearly likes managing in England. I think all of those things are plainly obvious. So I don't think there's a club big enough to tempt him away. He's always been adamant he won't go back to Barcelona, and they're a basket case anyway. So I'm not sure I see him managing another club, because I don't know what other club has the relevant profile unless he were to be tempted back to Barcelona, because he'll never manage Madrid. What is there left to do in Germany? PSG would be, winning the Champions League with them, okay, but like what legacy can you really build there?
And then Italy, Juventus?
They are the obvious, like, other country that he's not done. I don't know, I'm not sure I see it, but then that isn't, I'm not sure I can like fully reason that. I wouldn't be surprised if he were to be tempted by America if he ever does another club job, for the lifestyle and like somewhere where you could really go and say, this league is not the standard that I am used to, but here's the impact I can make and leave it better. I could see maybe that tempting him if he were to stay in club football. Ultimately, I think England is the only job that I saw him being tempted away by. I don't take him not taking that job as an indication that he's staying at City, but I think the noises at the moment sound really positive that he's leaning towards an extension, and I'd absolutely love that to be true. But it's just at that point now where, like, he doesn't owe anybody anything. If he goes, then it's with a huge thank you for the best football that we've ever seen or ever will see. So, yeah, I'd love that nice round 10. And then, for everything that Adam said to... For Adam's vision there to be a prophetic one would be fantastic. Just stay forever.
As much as people, like Pep, does bring players in and makes them world class, but I think Italy are too broke for even Pep to take them. Like Pep, like at any club would go, right, I want this guy, this guy, this guy, and they go, well, we've not got the funds or the pull. And I do think that sometimes it is just as simple as that.
Yeah,
like maybe if this was the 1990s, I'm sure he'd be AC Milan manager, but it's not anymore. So yeah, I agree with Richard. I think America's the only place I could see him as well.
Yeah, there's also the stories this week that I think The Athletic have been reporting that should, it's a massive caveat, but should City be found guilty of the Premier League charges, that might make him more likely to stay. Is that a trade-off you'd be happy with, Richard?
I mean, it depends on the punishment that would be attached to that guilt. Like the idea of Pep managing City through the sort of Northern League is irresistible, isn't it? No,
there's an itch there that needs scratching. But how desperately is the question?
Yeah. It's the idea that he could take the City job and go through the cycle of he'll never do it in England to he only ever takes big jobs. He could never do it with a Stoke. To then sort of City becoming the best ever English team. To then sort of proving the doubters wrong by City then becoming the non-league team that he can take back to the top would be a glorious cycle. But yeah. I would rather not go through all the palaver that would come with that.
Yeah, taking Joe Royal's title as the manager that's managed in most divisions. Yeah, didn't see that one coming. Right, so that's the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks also to my guests for this one. Adam Monk.
You're very, very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And Richard Burns.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, David.
We've heard Higgy already, but you can hear a clip of his quickfire episode coming up. That's this week's Nostalgia Show. And it's available for all Patreon backers. Head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast for more information. I'll be back after the games with Wolves and Sparta Prague. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I was at a wedding. Not only they've split up, so it just renders the whole thing utterly pointless anyway, so it makes me even more bitter about it. Like, well, that was the first thing. They've split up? What are you on about? They've split up? I missed the semi-final for their wedding. They can't split up. Before the actual ceremony, there was a little room where a security guy was, and he had it on in there. And I nipped in there a few times, but it was very much frowned upon by my partner at the time and everybody apart from the other lads that were sneaking in with me to watch it. And they got the speeches done at the end, and we ran across the car park to the Griffin in Bowden. So we're all suited and booted. We saw the final whistle. Walked out of the pub, giving it large, pumping the air and stuff. And there's this massive United fan standing there. He'd obviously seen us running in. And this guy just punched me in the face.
Fucking hell.
I'm at a wedding. I've got a suit on. He's punched me in the face. Fell back on my elbows. But such was the mood, I just sprang straight back up in his face and just went, with two fists, not hitting him, just like clenched in joy, and went, yeah!
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Step
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.